Welcome to the Wellbeing for Real Life podcast. Have you ever wanted to live life better, but found yourself baffled, bewildered, and bored by complicated, confusing, and condescending advice? This podcast is the antidote. I'm Dr. Richard Pyle, GP, lifestyle medicine specialist, and author of Fit for Purpose. Each episode, I'm joined by leading experts as we explore different areas that affect our everyday lives. This is the Wellbeing for Real Life podcast. Hello and welcome to Wellbeing for Real Life. My name is Dr. Richard Pyle and I'm a GP with a special interest in cardiovascular and lifestyle medicine. And today's episode, we're talking about purpose and meaning. I'm pleased to say that on the show today, we have the return of my friend and colleague, Dr. Wendy Malefi.
Hello, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Just in case people haven't heard you speak before, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Of course. I'm Wendy Malefi. I'm a GP, a portfolio GP. So that means I combine my skills as a GP with other interests such as well-being coaching as well as mindfulness teaching. So I run courses in mindfulness and I coach people.
So again, an excellent person to have on this particular podcast.
I hope so.
Great to have you. One of the things we like to do on the podcast is to keep it personal as well as practical. So I'm going to start by putting you slightly on the spot and asking you, from your perspective, what you might see as your purpose or one of your purposes in life.
That's very deep, Richard.
I thought we'd start deep.
Just dive right
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, get right in.
Okay, so what is my purpose in life? Purpose and meaning. Well, it's interesting. It's a very interesting question. And it's something, I guess, as I'm getting older, we're talking a lot more about these kind of things. And it's something that comes up as well in my coaching practice. But coming back to me, in terms of my own purpose in life, I guess it has evolved in the past, certainly as I was navigating life and, marriage, children, good job. So my purpose was to be a good mom, a good doctor, a good partner. Mm-hmm. I don't think things have changed so much from that, but I think over the last few years, it has become even more refined in the sense that there's a more of a sense of, I just want whatever it is that I put my heart into, I want to do it to the best of my ability, being a mom still, being a good doctor, which I thoroughly enjoy, and being a good partner. So my purpose in life is really to be a good person, cliche as it may sound, but be good and give the best that I can in whatever I put my heart into. Mm. Yeah. Does that make sense? I know it's a little bit here, there, but that's how it kind of feels like coming out at the moment, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And of course, in asking you that question, I was kind of putting you on the spot.
And
I doubt there are many people who have one purpose in life. You've described quite a few purposes, which I guess takes quite a lot of balancing to try and do and be all those different things.
That's interesting because it seems like it, but I think over time, I have learned to sort of make them dance together in some sort of harmony, if you like. They complement each other. I've realized that it doesn't have to be that, this, that, and the other. All these things, perhaps I'm not quite finding the right word for it, but I just feel they complement what my meaning of life is, what drives me in life, if you like. But before you jump in, I'm going to turn the question back. Now, you tell me, Richard, what is your purpose in life, do you think?
Well, I deserve that, don't I? I think I would start a little bit similar to you in that I think purpose changes over time. And at one stage in my life, purpose was probably just getting to the end of the day when my oldest was at home with us and his epilepsy was very severe. Mm. Getting to the end of the day and all still being intact and holding it together was one purpose. Thankfully, life has got easier and better for all of us since then. And I would say at the moment, you'll be unsurprised to hear that actually one of my purposes at the moment is really to try and spread this message that about what it means to be really well.
Yes.
And the fact that we need to look at the big picture, and that is very much more than just medicine.
Yes. Yes.
And I want to share that with not just my colleagues, but also my patients as well. And I think, and on a particular aspect of that, speaking as a person of faith as well, I think it's important that we talk about belief and spirituality and how that can, for some of us, if not all of us, be an important part of the meaning that we take from life as well. So I suppose right now, those are two of the things that are preoccupying me. My wife has commented on the fact that I need to be careful that I don't spend so much time pursuing those purposes that I can't balance all the other things. I'm still a father.
Yes.
I'm still a husband.
Yes.
My kids make music and are in a band together. And obviously, if they break America, that may well change my purposes.
Don't forget your friends
yeah,
if that happens.
I'll try not to, but my accountant says that doesn't constitute a retirement plan. So I'm keeping open-minded. But going back to the subject of purpose in life, is that a conversation that you often have with your patients or clients?
Now, that's food for thought. Certainly, as a GP, because as you well know, it's a 10-minute appointment, and more often than not, the specific thing to think about. But I think increasingly, with all these lifestyle-related problems, which more often than not stem from kind of stress and psychological issues, there's an opportunity sometimes, not always, I'll be honest, but there's often an opportunity to kind of bring up an element of finding out a bit more about the patient's life, their philosophy of life.
Mm.
Not as much as I'd like to, but as a coach, you know, as a well-being coach, that forms the core of the conversation. It certainly is highlighted at the beginning, whereby I establish the patient, well, my client's meaning of life, their values, their whole philosophy, to just see then where, how, and I can navigate the whole coaching process with them.
Mm.
So it's something that I think is increasingly being used. And I certainly, as a coach, I do use it a lot more.
And it certainly seems to me instinctively to be something that's important. I think there is also increasingly evidence for it, which we can get onto in a few minutes. But one of the things that I was just thinking about as you were describing that was the importance of knowing the whole patient. And if I'm really honest, when I first started as a wet behind the ears, young, ambitious, probably slightly cocky GP who thought that they
knew
it all.
Why am I not surprised?
Thank you. I probably wasn't as invested in that side of things.
Yes.
I had the model of the consultation in my head and the boxes that I had to tick and the areas that, to be honest, I wasn't particularly interested in exploring because that was going to make the consultation very messy and long and I was going to run late. and it wasn't my job, as far as I was concerned,
yes,
to talk about that.
Yeah.
But actually, even though there are days when I'm still very pragmatic and don't spend time longer than I have to on a simple consultation, I think increasingly I've seen over 20 years that that's in some ways it's a bit of a false economy, because if you don't understand someone, then that will seriously limit your therapeutic effectiveness as a doctor, even if actually it's not your job to be a therapist and the person really needs to be their own therapy. You need to know them. You need to understand them in order to be able to have those conversations. And if you're talking at cross purposes, if you have completely different ways of doing life, you either have to find a way to work around that or at least acknowledge that it exists and manage it.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more in the sense that we are better placed, I guess, as primary care doctors to initiate those kind of conversations, to be on the lookout, to be able to bring them up. And have you noticed also that, well, certainly from my point of view, they tend to be the most rewarding kind of conversations. Once you've had that sort of consultation, when you've listened, explored a little bit more, asked the patient those kind of intuitive, meaningful questions, there's something that moves for me and for the patient. There's a certain connection that then comes up from there when you have those kind of conversations. And it's all very interesting, actually, all this purpose in life and having conversations like this. But I was also thinking about, is there any evidence that underpins it? I don't know. Have you come across any?
I have been doing a lot of digging in the course of writing my book, and I was pleased to find that what I kind of instinctively thought was probably true does seem to be actually true. Now, you know, there are some caveats here. So we don't necessarily have the large scale trials of purpose and meaning in life that we would have for trialing a new medication for diabetes or a cholesterol lowering medication. But there's lots of data out there where that's been looked at in terms of questionnaires and prospective studies, and asking people about their life and getting them to rate their sense of purpose and meaning in life, and looking at the correlation. We can't necessarily say it's a causation, but an association with their health and well-being. And there are some really interesting findings. So we know, for example, that if you've already had a heart attack or been diagnosed with coronary artery disease, having a scoring, rating yourself highly in terms of purpose in life, significantly reduces your risk of having a further heart attack. We know that if you are generally an older person, having a higher sense of purpose in life reduces your risk of stroke and of dementia, of cognitive decline. In fact, it has been shown to reduce the risk of an early death from all different causes by having this sense of purpose and meaning. So there's enough there, I think, to really make it an important part of the conversation. And I personally believe, out of all the pillars that we talk about in these podcasts, that actually it may not be sleep and movement and nutrition connection, and probably purpose and meaning in life may well be some of the biggest determining factors, which I think is a real challenge for us, because those of us who are doctors, we weren't trained to deal with that.
No, definitely not. You know, our training doesn't equip us with some of these skills, but fortunately, most of us do try and educate ourselves, and through life's experiences, we are enlightened, in, for want of a better word, and we become more interested in these things. And yeah, like you're saying, we don't always have the time to do that, but it's just about having it at the back of one's mind to be open to that conversation and knowing it's a really interesting what you've just highlighted in terms of research, because as clinicians, we're very much driven by knowing that what we share with our patients is underpinned by some form of evidence-based medicine and studies. So it's reassuring from my point of view to hear that there is, you know, so we're onto something.
And I think in a subset of that evidence, that there's a really interesting conversation to be had about faith and belief as well. Now, I should be clear, obviously you can have purpose in life, whether or not you identify yourself as a religious person or a non-religious person. But there have also been quite a lot of studies done into looking at the importance of faith when it comes to health outcomes. And certainly there's plenty of evidence out there that shows, for example, better coping mechanisms and adapting to long-term conditions and serious illnesses, and even increased longevity, for example, in patients with HIV, and reducing, again, the risk of dying from any cause for people who identify themselves as religious. But interestingly, there are different degrees to which it helps you. So there was a big meta-analysis done, a review by a think tank called Theos, and they found that the more deeply held and regularly practiced your faith, the greater the impact it had on your sense of well-being. If you practiced it in a community, you were even more likely to do better. And of course, that's not a surprise based on our previous conversation about connections. But what was interesting was that just identifying yourself as having a belief and saying, this is my label, this is my badge, I'm a Roman Catholic, I'm a Muslim, I'm Jewish. If that was just how you normally identified yourself, that didn't make any difference at all.
How interesting.
And it was how you lived your life and how it affected you that made the difference.
Absolutely. That set of guiding principles and that, I guess, feeds into that common humanity within your community that in turn imbues that sense of connection and gives meaning to life, back to purpose, I guess.
So I suppose the question I would ask you then is, how would you broach that subject with a patient? Let's say that it's somebody that you know well enough. You've maybe had a conversation in the past where they're open to that. I think the challenge for us as doctors is how we address that whilst not breaking any codes of conduct, not making people feel uncomfortable, not making people feel worried that we might in some way be discriminating against them, depending on our own personal philosophies. What sort of conversations do you have around that?
Yeah, I guess it's that, how, yeah, our own meanings of life, our own sense of spirituality, how we bring it in. It's not always an easy thing to do, I mean, I will admit, in the sense that there's always those time constraints and there's always the, I guess, not wanting to cross lines as well. It's not something that I find easy, but sometimes, I think, as I mentioned at the beginning, that when you have that kind of connection with your patient, as we often do as primary care doctors, you know when to talk about certain things, because there's times when I've talked with worried mothers whereby I'll allude to my own motherhood issues, my own issues with children. And that is reassuring to our patients, actually, when you share those kind of personal stories. And for me, it'll be honest kind of sharing with patients. Mm. So in a sense, sometimes if I feel somebody feels stuck, or maybe when I'm stuck and I don't know how to particularly guide them, I just perhaps just open up the question in terms of what do we think this means, and just see what it opens up, and just be tentative about my own thoughts.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that this is underpinned by some evidence. It's always a good one or a useful one to say, actually, the evidence shows us that if you're a member of a community, if there's some sort of shared commonality, you're part of a tribe, it improves your sense of well-being. And then you try to explore, are you a member of a club? Are you? What do you do in your spare time?
Yep.
And then start guiding them. We've already mentioned things like social prescribing and just exploring whether the patient is open to those kind of ideas, and nurturing that conversation over time, because we can do. You can just explore it over time. I think that's my thinking. I don't know how you would. It's a difficult one. I don't know how you would explore it.
I think in some of the ways you've just described, I thought you gave a nice example of being able to share your experience of motherhood.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting if you think about it. If as a doctor you discovered an amazing way of getting to sleep, or a really good way of eating, or a brand new form of activity that you absolutely loved, I think most of us would feel very happy to share that with our patients. And yet there is that awkwardness over sharing personal philosophies or religious beliefs, which, if it's helped us, I don't think it seems illogical to do that. So I think you're right. It's about listening and asking questions if you feel someone is in the right place and they want to talk about it. And also, of course, it doesn't require you as a doctor or a healthcare professional to have any particular faith or religious belief. The reality is we all have ways of doing life. Some of us may describe ourselves as belonging to a particular group. Others may not. But we can at least ask the question, because someone might say, actually, I used to belong to this group or this faith community, which was really helpful. But then I drifted away, or I fell out with them, or I had an upset in my life that interrupted it, or, you know, the pandemic's been difficult for the last 12 months. And we can then ask them questions about whether that's something they'd like to explore again, you know, whether it's something they could take comfort from if they've been bereaved. Would they like a visit from their rabbi or their imam or their vicar, or someone else who is even a humanist chaplain or whatever, or someone who could support them? I think a good non-religious way of looking at it, which I think people might find more comfortable, is the concept of ikigai. I don't know whether that's something that you've
I've come across that. Tell me more.
Well,
I can see your eyes light up.
You can, can't you? It's the only picture in my entire book, actually, is an ikigai diagram. So ikigai, crudely translated, is a Japanese word that means reason for being. Not an exact translation, but thereabouts. And if you type in ikigai into Google, you will tend to get a bog standard diagram, which has what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can get paid for. And if you imagine that as a sort of Venn diagram with those four different circles, the very simplistic concept is, if you can have things in your life where those all four circles meet in the middle, then that's the sweet spot. You've found your ikigai, as it were. Now, it's a bit simplistic. It's not true to the original Japanese concept, as you can see if you look at the diagram in my book. But that in itself also talks about things like hobbies, passions, creativity, relationships. And I think talking to people about, you know, what is it that you enjoy in life? What is it that you are good at? Oh, it just so happens that that's what you do for a job. Brilliant. What happens if actually you really hate your job and you don't view that as your life, you view that as your work, but it's not ticking any of the boxes, any of the other three areas? Say, for example, is there a place for a conversation about whether employment is the right thing? Now I know it's a pandemic. People are going to be facing difficulties. There will be more unemployment. But you and I both know that we've seen lots of people over the years who keep coming to us with depression, who keep getting signed off. The real problem is that they need to change their job, or at least some of their roles in life.
Or even their attitude towards
it. Yeah, exactly. Mm. And I think sometimes being able to frame it, you talked about reframing in our previous episode, being able to reframe it and looking at it in a different way can be helpful to some people. So I encourage people to go away and think about that, because that's a neutral way of looking at it. And I say to them, look, you know, you might not find something, one area of your life where all of those different areas are perfect, but you may find that between what you do and what you get paid for and what you love about and what you volunteer for in your spare time, that gives you enough. And maybe you just need to tweak that balance a bit more of something, a bit less of something else.
Yeah, I think that's really true, Richard. And something that you said earlier on as well, it's also about, I think, an opportunity to explore all these other aspects of life that we've talked about in terms of that sense of contentment, how people can have that sense of contentment so that there isn't this need to be doing a million and one things, which, yeah, lo and behold, stress comes knocking on the door or other issues. So it's just about, yeah, finding that balance, that life balance that I think we mentioned or talked about, in terms of constantly isolating things that are just part of life, how you relate to life in a way that fulfills you. So I don't know if you have any little snippets that we can sort of put together and share in terms of how do we cultivate our purpose and meaning in life.
I think it sounds like we're heading towards a top tips section of this podcast, isn't it? So if I were to start off, I would say, think about your ikigai.
Yes.
Now, there's a second part to that, so I'm cheating slightly. I'm putting two tips into one. I think take a step back. Purpose and meaning is one of those things it's very easy to never think about if we don't give ourselves time, because life is busy. Yeah. And I appreciate, you know, different people are in different circumstances and have lives which are much more difficult and stressful than mine on some levels. But actually setting aside that time to contemplate, what is it that fulfills me in life? What do I take great joy from? What do I really not like? And could, have I got any room that in terms of maneuver there? And that will only happen if you give yourself the time. So I talk to people about taking themselves on a retreat. Mm-hmm. Now, to some of us, a retreat might conjure up an image of wearing a robe and sitting on top of a mountain, which would be great if you can do that when travel restrictions permit. But actually, it needn't be a week's retreat. It needn't even be a whole day off a week if you can't afford that. It could just be 5 minutes a day. It might be better if it's, you know, half an hour or an hour a week where you just have that time for yourself. And if you live alone, you may have some control over that. If you've got a partner and you've got a family, you can have a conversation with them about how that time could be protected.
Yes, negotiating that time with others around you, yes.
And regarding it as an investment, you know, you could tell your other half, your children, your work colleagues, whatever, that what a more lovely human being you're likely to be as a result of having had time to take stock. And then from that, think about those areas using the Ikigai type model and ask yourself if there are any obvious things that spring to mind. So those would be a couple of things that I would suggest. Can I turn that around on you,
yes,
Wendy?
Yes, of course you can. I knew that was coming. I was just thinking, it's always important also to just ensure that the basics are taken care of. I think we all know about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, the sleep, the food, rest, and all that is, you have the fundamentals taken care of, security, relationships, all that is taken care of. And before you start kind of, not even before, as part of the whole process of contemplating this whole process of what does life mean? What is my purpose in life? That sense of self-actualization, as it were. And I take it even a step further, because sometimes, more often than not, there's this sense of it then becomes selfing. It becomes about you.
Mm.
It should just be broadened, I think, from my point of view anyway, that then it needs to include others around you. One's sense of purpose shouldn't always necessarily be just around themselves. I guess it starts from that inner wisdom, but it should take into consideration the core dependence, core relationships that we have with others around us. That I think that adds that little bit layer of meaning to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think thinking more about we than just I is important. And going back to your comment about Maslow's hierarchy, I think if we don't ever consider the tip of the pyramid, as it were, the self-actualization, the transcendence, and transcendence typically is a term which includes things like helping others and areas of science and faith. If we don't consider that, we're potentially limiting the amount of enjoyment we can get out of life. Now, some might say, well, that's fine. I'm happy to live my life without ever getting to the top of the mountain. And I know it isn't as simple as that about getting to the top and staying there, but actually it is a real extra dimension to our lives that I think can be so enhancing if it's something that we're just able to give ourselves a bit of time to think about.
And one thing I really want to get in quickly as well in all this, although we'll mention it in other podcasts, is just that sense of kindness and compassion towards ourselves, because along this whole search for meaning and purpose, we won't always get it right. We will stumble and fall. So it's about knowing that we can get up, but getting up with that sense of a beginner's mind, being kind to ourselves, being compassionate to ourselves, which actually in turn makes it easier for us to be kinder to other people.
That is a very positive and appropriate note, I think, to end the podcast on, Wendy. So thank you very, very much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
I hope that our listeners have at least as much as we have. And I look forward to us speaking together again soon.
Of course.
Take care.
Thanks, Richard.
You've been listening to Wellbeing for Real Life with me, Dr. Richard Pyle. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give it a nice review and tell other people about it. If you'd like to learn more, my book Fit for Purpose is out now, published by Harper Inspire and available in paperback, ebook and audiobook. You can also follow me on Twitter, YouTube and my website, wellbeingforreal.life. This podcast was recorded at Monkey Nut Audiobooks. Until next time, take care of yourself.